All right, and we are back for part two, talking about Rubrik with Josh Steinhouse. Welcome back, Josh. Thanks for your time.
Hey, Josh.
Awesome. So we're going to jump right in, following on from part one, and we're going to talk about the top five tips that you have for us from a Rubrik and ransomware perspective, and then dive into a bit of a demo, which is quite exciting. So the floor is yours.
Okay. So, you know, it's a good place to start because usually I'll talk for 50-odd minutes with a customer or a prospect or just at an event and not always do the best job of summarizing, as we just saw on the previous session. So, you know, if I was going to summarize, I'd say the first thing is that you have to presume that everything running in a VM in an environment is going to be encrypted in an attack, especially if you're running VMware. It is now the most common attack, 60% plus of attacks. Everything's encrypted from the hypervisor. So if you think about your recovery and your response plan, if it involves a service that is running in a VM, then your plan is going to fall to bits very quickly. That's number one. Number two.
So basically, if we've got a dependency that's in a VM that's going to be potentially encrypted, then we may not be able to recover at all, is your key point there.
Yeah. And it's like, and think about just an easy example is, well, we'll go to our monitoring platform and our monitoring platform will tell us what's down. Well, guess what? If that's running in a VM, that's down. So, you know, you really got to look at anything that can be SaaS and hardened and not encrypted in your hypervisor, then do so. A great example is a SIM or SIEM. Like, your SIEM should not be running in that data center in a VM, because if it is, then all your alerting and security notifications are gone too. Okay, number two, you cannot recover to yesterday. Biggest mistake in tabletop exercises I see next is just presuming that you can either recover to yesterday or you will automagically know the recovery point. Because an attacker is going to be in your environment for multiple days. Median dwell time in North America, 5. Rest of world, 9 days. That's not me. That's Mandy and M-Trends, the definitive source as far as I'm concerned. But we also see that via our response team too. So they've been in your environment for a period of days. They've established persistence on a handful of servers. And now, in a true attack and what you should be simulating, you've first got to find out, well, where did they establish that persistence? And what is a clean recovery point per server? Because a clean recovery point for one server is not the same as the next. And there are serious implications of that. One, in just potentially letting an attacker back into the environment, which is not good. And then two, data loss. Because if you can't discern the difference, you're probably going to chop off everything. And then you might cause more damage than just paying the ransom and recovering than just in the impact of data loss alone. That's number two. Any questions on that?
Well, yeah, I think that's a key point, that if you just recovered it yesterday or even the day before, you don't know if it's clean yet. So actually validating where you've got a clean copy of data that's safe is actually probably one of the most difficult things to do, especially with traditional solutions.
And that's actually number three, is that finding a clean recovery point is way harder than you think. Because you basically, if you get attacked, you know the attacker is in that environment, so you shut down everything. And now think about the logical process that you're going to have to follow, which is, okay, we don't know. Everything's shut down, so we can't scan it. So now we're going to recover from backup. We're then going to isolate, load some sort of scanner that we've never had before because all our previous tools failed. And now we're going to scan file by file, server by server, and then either keep it or throw it away and say, okay, recover again, recover again. And you get stuck in a loop. And that's why you see organizations down for weeks upon weeks, because the tabletop exercise wasn't sufficient in requiring them to actually find a clean recovery point. And then finding that recovery point is way slower and more cumbersome than they ever imagined, because they probably never practiced it.
Yeah, difficult to practice, timely, or very expensive to get done. Making sure you've got the right people to actually perform the task and that know how to perform the task as well. So, yeah, your recovery point might end up being, you know, many days or weeks. And the recovery time, which might even be the worst factor, is it takes so long to do this that even if you recover and you've only lost 2 days' data, you might be 3-4 weeks down the track before you can recover that 2 days of RPO. So
yeah,
it's very important to understand those two things. It's you might have the data, but how long does it then take for you to recover it? You're still down for that period of time.
Yeah, and that down for that period of time is more data loss because you couldn't generate new data because the system was down. So it ends up in the same result. So that was number three. Number four is you cannot tell what was exfiltrated unless you manage to get hold of a data dump of everything that the attacker has, which sometimes they will supply and say, hey, this is everything that we have. And if you can get that, then okay, you can tell what was stolen. But if you don't have that, then it doesn't matter what you invest in terms of scanning the network or data loss prevention tooling. An attacker has an encrypted tunnel and a backdoor. They will siphon off via that tunnel. You can't scan inside that tunnel. So you usually have to presume that anything that was encrypted most definitely was exfiltrated, because if they can encrypt it, they can definitely access it. That's your baseline minimum. But more than likely, any sensitive data that was on that network or in that O365 org or in that Azure or AWS subscription, you have to presume is exfiltrated. And so then the next question you're going to have to answer very quickly in response to an attack is, what sensitive data was in it? And if you don't have an immediate ability to answer that, or let's say your tooling that might give you that answer is running in a VM, both are not good situations. You're not going to be able to quickly understand the impact, and you have to get a handle on it. A handle of it in response to an attack. But the real secret of tip number four is that if you presume everything could be stolen, then you should be looking at it proactively across your entire network, especially dev test servers. Attackers love dev test. People handily leave gobs and gobs of CSVs of critical information around the place that they shouldn't. And so if you're gonna do yourself your biggest favor is have a plan and a continual practice of like mitigation and remediation of sensitive data. And if it shouldn't be there, then remove it. Because it's too late after the fact, the horse already bolted.
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly once data's released, it's out there. So there's no coming back from that, as many organizations have unfortunately experienced.
Yeah, and full transparency, we experienced that at Rubrik, and you can see it all over our blog, and it's testament to just the fact that it doesn't matter who you are or what you do, anyone can have a zero-day vulnerability. Now, at Rubrik, it wasn't even our zero-day. It was a zero-day in another piece of software, a Fortra Go Anywhere, which is a file transfer service, and they said, hey, here's a patch. You might want to check because we believe that it's been exploited for a period of time before this patch. And then lo and behold, everything on our, it's basically a fancy FTP service. And so everything on the FTP server, all the files had of course been stolen. And so the attacker never actually breached our network because they never established a footprint, but they basically pilfered everything off an FTP server that was from a dev test environment. And so we drink our own champagne at Rubrik. We knew what was in those files, and we immediately notified everyone impacted and said, well, we're not paying shit. That's the basic premise. But the anything can be compromised at any point in time. And if you don't have a good handle on what is on every single server in your network, then all it's going to do is increase the impact. And also, there can also be legal implications of it, because Rubrik wasn't the only organization attacked from the Fortra Go Anywhere. There was 110 other organizations compromised by it. We were the first to announce, because of course we should, as given we're a data security company. I believe two others have come forward since, but there are some hospitals that were part of that are now being sued by their patient data being out there, and they didn't have a good handle on what was on it, because obviously they weren't scanning for the sensitive data.
Absolutely. I think that's a general rule as well, not just with ransomware. You've got to know what's in your environment, where your data is, where your services run, you know, where your critical applications are. So I think that's just a great tip overall.
Oh, yeah. But you'll definitely wish you had done it once an attacker has your data and you don't know what's in it. All right, that's number four. And then number five is very pertinent to a ransomware attack is that, you know, part of my job is I come in after the fact and speak to anyone that's being hit. And I say, okay, What do you wish you'd have known? And the basic summary everyone gives me is, there was my life and my experience and knowledge before an attack, and then me after an attack. And I fundamentally changed as a human. I don't ever think anything's the worst thing I've ever seen anymore, because it can't be as bad as that. But also the lessons learned are pretty off the charts in terms of the knowledge and experience required. So the basic summary is, everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face. And when you get punched in the face, you know what that feels like and you know how to respond. So every tip that I just gave, don't just say, oh yeah, great tip. Write them down. And now go and do a tabletop exercise and put them in action and see what happens, because you will invariably see things that you weren't looking at before. Massive assumptions on availability of services, massive assumptions on recovery points and finding that. And on your next tabletop, if you put the first four tips in advance, you will see your true recovery time objective. It won't be pretty. And that's not a failure. That's a success. It's a success because you did that in peacetime and you now have an opportunity to go and fix it. If you never did it, then you get hit, then yeah, that's a failure. But it, you know, people think, oh, I failed the tabletop because I couldn't recover in X hours. Well, okay, in practice you did, but I'd sure as hell, you know, fail it in a practice so that I can practice again. And that's the whole point, is practice, practice, practice. First one, once you put in these assumptions, I guarantee it's going to be, you know, a complete shit show. But that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think just having the discussion, working through each of those points, understanding, you know, what the risk could be and what the impact would be, and just writing those things down, straight away it's going to help you get, first of all, budget potentially for consultants to come in and have a look at it. You might be able to speak to some vendors who can help you consider your options. And then the business can prioritize, you know, which things they're going to solve first based on the business risk. And where one of those risks is we don't know where our data is, then that's a really good one to start with as well.
Yeah. And I'd encourage anyone listening to this, be that person in the room, because you're doing everyone a favor and your employer a favor by challenging everything. If somebody says, oh, well, I'll just log into this and recover, why? Well, how do you log in? Is that using a directory service? What's that directory service running? Where is it running? Oh, is that AD running in a VM? No, it's gone. It needs somebody being like, it's almost like a red team exercise in every single tabletop. If you don't have a red team, then you should definitely bring one in, or you should try and act like it and just act like an attacker and act as though you've taken that out, and then say, okay, now how would you log in? It's an easy example, but just keep working down that route and challenging each step, and that will help you get to a way better place, because it really is just like a complete fog of war and attack. You just don't know where they are. They're on a server, at least one, but which one? And the bigger the environment, then the more needle in a haystack that is. But even in a small environment, let's say you got, I don't know, 30 VMs, tiny environment. Well, okay, which one of the 30?
Still one in 30, right? They're not good on.
It's still not easy. And it's not like they put a big beak, change the desktop and say, I'm here. So it's challenging. And it's just the things that people don't think about or test. And I'd say as a bonus tip, I come across it so often. I have a wall of shame on my Evernote account, which is every organization that says to me, I have the best endpoint protection that I'm never going to need to recover from immutable backups. I'm like, yeah, good one. Because if all you needed was good at endpoint protection, then why is this even a problem? Mm. It's not true. It's never been the case. And it's, to be honest, it's just a deluded state where I hope they don't find out the hard way, but secretly, if they do, I've got their name noted and I will have a drink to them.
Yeah. And I think the other thing is, like, your point about assumptions, right? Anytime as an architect we make an assumption, right? That's usually at the very early stage of a project. And then we go through and we try and validate or correct those assumptions before we go into any sort of implementation phase. So if there's assumptions in a production environment, they should straight away be translated to a risk and then you should know the impact and the probability of those risks and then work towards resolving them. So I think to your point, your fifth point was simply to put the first four points as your items, your action items, and work through them. And this is an exercise that, you know, you can do with your team already. You don't need an external person to come in and do that for you. You can do it yourself. And then once you get to a point where you go, okay, we need some help, you know, then you bring someone in, you know, after you've done that initial consultation internally, and then get some assistance at that point.
Agreed. I think that's the best way to do it, because then you can also list specific problems that you encountered once you factored these in and say, how do we mitigate this? Please help me. And then at least you're giving your external counsel or consultation some very pointed problems to solve. What I hate is just the general, hey, we don't know, come in. And if you ask a general question, you're probably going to get a generic response. And you might not get the solution that you're looking for. I'd rather have a list of specific problems. We tried a tabletop, and these are the five things that we encountered. Help. If you go in with that, I guarantee you're going to get a way better outcome from any external consultation.
Yeah, absolutely. The more prepared you are as a team before you get someone involved, certainly the better. And if you don't feel like you have the skills to lead that initial exercise yourself, bring someone in to help lead the exercise, but make sure you participate in it. Because an external consultant, you bring me in, right? If I have to discover everything myself, right, that takes a long time, first of all, so the cost would go through the roof. But also, I don't necessarily have the intellectual knowledge of, you know, that specific customer environment, right? I might know the technologies very well. I might have done it 100 times before. But there's always little nuances in customer environments that are important to know from that team. So definitely include your staff in those consultations. Don't just expect an external party to come in and do them for you.
Yeah, I mean, like the Accentures of this world. It's like you're probably going to spend millions and get a 500-page document that does nothing.
Yeah, that's the thing. And also from any report you get or any recommendations, you want something actionable. So this is your risk. This is some options on how to mitigate it. So you need an architect or a vendor who's got architecture skills to talk about not only the business side, but the solution architecture as well as the implementation piece. Because there's no point having a conceptual document that doesn't flow through the logical and physical layers. So to me, that's when you engage someone, you want a company that takes you the whole route down that journey.
Agreed.
So I think now that we've covered off those five tips, which I think are spot on, did you want to fire up a quick demo and show us some of the magic that Rubrik can do?
Okay. Twist my arm. I don't normally demo. I always have to preface this these days, but I did demo for a long time. So, you know, I'm always a big proponent of that. If you can't demo it just off the cuff, then is that because it's really complicated? And there are some of competitors of ours, I won't name names, but they're publicly traded, and you can go and see the breakdown of the revenue, and over 55% of their revenue is professional services. And you have to ask yourself some serious questions there. If 55% plus of your revenue is professional services, then how easy is it to implement and use that solution? It's like, I tell you, that's ridiculous. And so that's actually one of the two major reasons why I joined Rubrik initially. Is one, in terms of like the UI and the simplification of the stack, that was like the goal, is converge, simplify, make it so easy, automate it, reduce the admin overhead. Like typical Rubrik customer saves 90% admin overhead of just managing backup. Now, if you're a backup team of 30 people, you probably don't like that, because 25 of them don't need to do anything anymore and they can go and work on other things. But that's never been who we've targeted. We've usually gone like above that level, or for teams that don't want to manage backup day to day. Because if we automate it, we make it simple, and a human can't do the same job as a machine can in the middle of the night in determining when to back something up or not. Like your backup admins aren't sat there saying, oh, this server's free, let's go. Rubrik is. That's one of the first reasons that I joined. And then the other reason that
I
joined.
Though, like, is, I think it's important Yeah, I was just going to say, if you have that example you gave of 30, I think was the number you gave, of 30 backup admins, plenty of companies around the world have more than that even, right? If you implement a solution where you no longer have those people requiring to do that, what I would consider reasonably mundane, and even though it's valuable, it's something that should be automated, and a product and a solution well-architected and implemented should be pretty much automated mostly, with some validation. Those people can actually go do something of much higher value. So if you're that backup admin, you're worried about losing your job, same as the old, you know, the physical server admins were worried about losing their jobs with virtualization. You just elevate your role to something more valuable. And if anything, it's a great career move and great career opportunity, because you can level up. You can actually go and do something more challenging, more valuable, and actually potentially earn more money, have a more exciting day job, and do less mundane tasks. So I think that's what I always try and do. I try and make tasks that I do redundant and automated. Either if I can eliminate the task, fantastic, or I try and automate it and then try and do something else. And that's my whole career. It's where I've got to where I am today from trying to do that.
Me too, mate. Preaching to the choir. But on two aspects there, well, I want to dial in on that. I always try and get it across, but it is sometimes hard. And it might seem like I'm being mean, but I'm not. I'm actually trying to help you. And let's say you give me a backup admin who's been using the same software for 20 years. You're a specialist in, I don't know, let's pick something really old like TSM. Okay, hey, really good that you have 20 years of experience. You know TSM. You know what would be more awesome is if you also knew Rubrik and how to switch between the two. That is far more valuable than somebody who just knows TSM. And it's hard to get people in that mindset. That's how I was when I worked in IT, is, hey, new technology, amazing. I'll learn that too. And that's now on my skills matrix, on my CV, on my next job. I know this. And it just makes you more valuable and employable. And especially now with Rubrik, I mean, if you look at our trajectory and movement over the Magic Quadrant and the customer count and the revenue over the last 7 years, like, I think we're basically building the Death Star without anyone knowing that we're on the Death Star. And it's getting to the point, I think, in the next couple of years where you won't get fired for buying Rubrik, but you will get fired if you didn't and you're attacked. So it is now is a solid time as ever to say, I want to go and learn the best in the industry in terms of backup and recovery with data security built in. And it is only going to pay dividends for yourself professionally, knowing that skill set and how to use it and implement it. So that, you know, ties to the automation piece.
Mm.
But then the other piece of why I joined at Rubrik was actually API.
Mm.
That Rubrik is relatively new in terms of a company, like 2015-ish. Mm. And that meant that everything we've ever done has always been API first. Now, it started all with REST APIs. And now recently we switched to GraphQL just because of the scale and the speed, especially with everything being SaaS front end. But the important thing I've always found with the APIs is that if there is a button in a UI, you can automate it.
Mm.
And like yourself, I always believe that you should automate yourself out of any mundane day-to-day tasks to elevate yourself in an organization. Put it on your CV. I did this. I automated that. And that's always been the case at Rubrik, is that not only does it automate itself, anything that you do have to do, you can also automate, because everything has an API, everything has an SDK, and if you click it, you can automate it. So it's like, you know, if you go and look at anything where it's still running Java, for example, I guarantee if it's got APIs, they're very limited in the functionality, and you're going to run out of runway very quickly.
Yeah, so just to dig in on one of your points, which I really liked, is, you know, you've got a backup admin, might be the TSM person in your example, and they learn Rubrik or they learn another vendor. It doesn't really matter. But to me, I've always found it really valuable as an architect, as an engineer, and doing implementations, that I know the competitive landscape. That, you know, I've been a VMware person for a very long time, or 20 years or something, I've been doing VMware. And I've done very little with Hyper-V in terms of customer deployments, but I've done a lot at the back end to make sure I understood that product, what it could do, what it couldn't do, what its limitations were, things like that. And then when I was with Nutanix, learning, you know, the AHV platform as well, again, competing platforms, pros and cons, understanding what problems they solve technically and commercially, And that makes you think a lot broader as well. So it means when you, even if you continue to recommend the same product after doing all those comparisons and learning multiple products, you do so from a much more expert level where you've considered all the options, you know the pros and cons, and you've given an informed opinion other than just a champion of product A. You know, you really want to be a champion of multiple products and then say, look, I know all these products, I can do all of them for you, but I recommend this one for these specific reasons, which map to your business requirements as well. So learning multiple technologies only makes you better, whether you stick with the original one or the subsequent ones that you learn, in my opinion anyway.
Yeah, I mean, just don't silo yourself, because if you go for another job, either by choice or by force, and especially anything in infrastructure, they will list, hey, these are the 10 technologies we work with. Great source of information for an attacker, by the way. I think maybe we should stop doing that as an industry. If I want to know what a company is using for technology, I'll just go to LinkedIn or one of their infrastructure team, and they say, I work with this. And I'm like, okay, I know the stack. That's fine. But don't limit yourself, because you don't know what the next company is going to ask for. And they might have been running like Commvault for 20 years. So if you know Commvault and Rubrik, you can go in and say, hey, I know your Commvault, but I also know something better that's more modern. And if somebody says, okay, now we've got a cyber resilience project, you're like, ding, 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 arm up. I know exactly what we can do here. And it's just going to exponentially increase your value.
Absolutely. So yeah, good bit of advice on career growth and moving up into more of an advisory or architect role, or even, you know, lead engineering role, just by knowing multiple technologies. But that's a bit of a tangent we went off on there, but that was a good one. So back to Rubrik, right. I guess. So I stalled
you enough to try and share my screen. All right. So entire screen, let's go. And then I'm guessing I need to minimize this, not use this platform. So hopefully you can still see me and you can still see the screen.
Can indeed.
Wait, you can now see the screen?
Yep.
All right, let's go. Okay. So how many minutes do you want me to go for, by the way? I could do anything. I can do 10, 20, 50. I could do 3 hours.
15 minutes. We don't give me a ballpark. To go too far. But yeah, 15 minutes or so. And yeah, we can do really deep dives another time. But just overall, let's see for those unfamiliar with Rubrik.
Okay. All right. 15 minutes. Stopwatch. Go. All right. So this is the Rubrik interface. This is our SaaS control plane that we call the Rubrik Security Cloud. I've already logged in, but the basic premise here is that you tie the login to your single sign-on, so your Active Directory, whatever you're using. You also then, whatever you're using for MFA. You then configure an IP allow listing, so you're controlling where you can even log into this from what parts of the world. We blacklist obvious countries and nation states that should never even get access to it. So it's SaaS-based in terms of the interface, but the most important thing is that this is just the command and control. So it doesn't matter where you're actually backing up and recovering your data, whether it's an on-premises virtual machine, database, physical server, or it's an EC2 instance or O365, everything you're managing here, but you're always still controlling the data locality. So if I dive into the data protection, this is the backup overview. That everything Rubrik does is predicated on replacing your day-to-day backup and recovery capabilities wherever the data lies. But if we dial in and look at your data center, to give you a local immutable backup and the fastest recovery speed, we're going to put in Rubrik clusters in every single one of your data centers. And if it's a remote satellite office, then we'll put in virtual. You can also put these in cloud and connect them and back up anything running in cloud, whether it's VMC or AVS. But usually you're only using a Rubrik cluster when you're backing up either on-premises data centers and virtual machines and servers, or data inside VMs running in the cloud, like databases, SQL, Oracle, etc. But the key thing for each of these is that you have a physical appliance. And that physical appliance is what is going to give you that local compute for an immutable local copy and then the fastest recovery speed. Now, Rubrik provides the software. So we're providing the operating system, secure hardened Linux, absolutely no Windows. Windows is compromised in every attack. And then furthermore, it's locked off the network in terms of there's no access to the underlying operating system, no access to the operating system shell, and all the storage is remote procedure calls. There's no SMB or NFS. So what I'm looking at here from this SaaS control plane is in this data center, we have a bunker in a box or a series of boxes together in a cluster, and I'm monitoring their capacity, their performance, the nodes that are available, but all of the storage is self-contained within this cluster. And anywhere else that I choose to send it, whether it's to replicate to another Rubrik cluster, send it to the cloud, that's purely for additional recovery locations. It's not to give you a secure copy of the data because that is the first copy. But furthermore, because it's connected to this SaaS-based control plane, if the data is encrypted inside that data center, specifically all the virtual machines, this Rubrik cluster that we see here has a copy of all your data, can't be encrypted itself because nothing is running inside that hypervisor. And so what I've seen now in 150 plus major attacks is that the only thing you can guarantee that's still going to survive is your SaaS-based control plane of Rubrik, because it's SaaS, can't encrypt it, and all of the data that we've managed to pull into your Rubrik cluster that you have inside your data center. So that straight away is an immediate benefit to the posture and recoverability of your backups, because a lot of people tend to think, well, I just need to make the backup data immutable. Well, this is making the backup data immutable, but also the backup infrastructure and the recovery infrastructure, and also all of our scanners and intelligence and understanding what's happening inside those backups is built into each Rubrik cluster. So when we're scanning the data and scanning the backups, it's done inside the Rubrik cluster. You're not having to send it elsewhere. You're not having to then break, you know, any sort of data regulations or rules on the geography of the data. You're not sending the data anywhere that you don't want to. And for me, this is a perfect balance, because the future is SaaS. Everything's going SaaS. But that doesn't mean I want my data in the cloud. So for me, this is the perfect balance of, well, if I choose never to let the data outside of this data center in Palo Alto, it doesn't have to. But I still get my SaaS-based control plane. And then furthermore, once I start then looking at, well, what are the bigger benefits of that? And what it means is that, well, now I can manage backup and recovery for everything inside my data center without ever leaving this interface across 1, 2, 10, 50, 300, however many data centers you have. And so it doesn't matter whether it's a vSphere VM, Hyper-V, AHV, your hypervisor, sir, Linux, Unix, file sets, Windows, SQL, DB2, blah, blah, blah. Basically everything soup to nuts. Everything you can manage from the central location. And it doesn't matter where the data is in terms of your day-to-day management of backup and recovery, because you're just going to the server, going to the file, and then driving and saying, hey, I need to recover this whole virtual machine. Okay, when from? Yesterday, point, click, go. Okay, I'm going to then give you a list of backups on that day, recover. What do you want to do? I want to recover the whole VM. Maybe I want to instantly mount it from that local Rubrik cluster. Go. Which cluster? Which network? Do I want to do some advanced networking, remove or preserve? Do I want to change the name? Blah, blah, blah. Just a few clicks. And the cool thing with that live mount process is that that VM will be online in seconds, because all Rubrik is going to do from that local Rubrik cluster is create an immutable view of the VM, instantly mount it to the host, and then bang, it's online, do a storage vMotion at your leisure. You might say, ah, but Josh, I need a file. Well, great. And then just type the name of the file. And now it's immediately said, okay, these are all the files on that VM. And for a lot of backup technologies, especially the older ones, you're like, well, this must mean you're doing file-based backups. Absolutely not. Rubrik is backing up the entire VM, whether it's VMware, AHV, or Hyper-V, doesn't matter. But then we're always cracking it open, indexing it, and giving you this file-level intelligence. So which file do you want from which point in time? Recover the file, the disk, the whole VM, doesn't matter. But that's your on-premises workloads. If we go back to our inventory, the next big benefit of the SaaS-based interface is, well, then I can do this across cloud too. So here we're protecting Azure SQL, Azure VMs, EC2, RDS, GCP, SQL managed instances, Entra ID, which is the worst name product ever. It's Azure AD, but that's fine. And then you say, okay, about SaaS, we protect O365. We are just bringing on support for Jira. And then early next year, we're adding probably the number one, which is Salesforce, which is kind of ironic in my opinion, because we use Salesforce ourselves. But hopefully we'll get that sooner rather than later. And this is probably going to be the biggest area of innovation that you're going to see in terms of like number of services that we back up and recover over the next year, because it's pretty light. There's just one tile here. Everything else is much more built out. But I just want to hang for a couple more minutes on backup and recovery before I talk about the real secret sauce of Rubrik.
I think there's a couple of key points in here. So
go on.
We're talking ransomware. Being able to live mount from a copy that you've already got in an immutable fashion means that you're not waiting for a full restoration. So that helps speed up your recovery time. So straight away, if your recovery time needs to be short, you need to consider a solution that can live mount. I would say is one of the factors, and it saves a lot of time, saves a lot of processing power as well in terms of taking it from somewhere and sending it somewhere else. If you're moving data, you know, especially large, you know, many, many terabytes or petabytes of data, that takes a long time. So when your recovery time needs to be short, this is a feature that you really must have.
Agreed. But also, the entire feature and capability needs to be driven from something running outside of the hypervisor. So if you say, hey, I'm using XYZ today, I can live mount. Okay, but is there a management running in a VM? Then you can't live mount. And then you might say, well, I'll just spin up a new VM. And I'm like, hang on a second. So you're telling me that in the event of an attack, then Bob the backup admin's going to spin up a Windows VM just because he says he needs that to recover? Security and incident response will shoot you down quicker than you can suggest it. So you've got to make sure that your ability to live mount itself is built in and survivable from the attack, not just the backup data.
Absolutely. And even if you could do that, even if the security team let you do it or you did it without approval, it still takes time to do that. So
I mean, you might have to
may work, but it may take a lot longer than what you want.
Again,
looking back to RTO, we want to get the recovery time objective, we want it as short as possible to mitigate the impact of one of these attacks. So anything we can do to avoid, you know, manual steps is extremely valuable.
Agreed. Yeah, you might be losing the first day of RTO and just rebuilding your backup management infrastructure.
Absolutely.
And is already going to exceed the business expectations.
Yeah, so obviously we have, for those listening, we've referred to RTO and RPO a lot. So recovery time objective, how long it takes you to recover, and recovery point objective, which is how much data loss you're experiencing. So these two can be different. They don't have to be 1 hour and 1 hour. One might be, your recovery time might have to be within an hour, but you might be able to lose a week's data, right? If it's a test lab, that might not matter. Whereas if it's a banking environment, you really can't lose data, but you might be able to tolerate a small outage. So it might be, you know, close to zero data loss or as close as you can get, and it might be a 2 hour recovery time. So it's just a couple of examples to consider.
Yeah, agreed. So last couple of points on backup is then next benefit is you get centralized policy management and automation of all the backup jobs. So you configure it here, pushes out everywhere, and it auto adheres to the time zone of the Rubrik cluster in terms of your backup window. You get centralized events, audit logs. Someone does a backup, someone does a recovery, plug it in here, somebody logs in, you'll see it. And then you also get centralized reporting. So this is not a separate tool, not a separate interface. You're not managing jobs or reports per data center, per cloud account. You're doing it centrally. And that's also a big benefit of why Rubrik for cloud backups in general versus native tools is that you get this single pane of glass for automating the protection and then reporting on it thereafter. And then you get the centralized view on live mounts and that key capability of instantly recovering the data across your global estate. You can kick it off from here. It's actually running then from the Rubrik cluster in that data center, but you can centrally manage it.
Yeah, so I think this is a good point as well. A lot of the topics, you know, my customers talk about and things close to my heart are the multi-cloud solutions. So customers are deploying on a hypervisor, on a hyperscaler, and they need a solution to back up and do DR, ransomware, all these things. This is an example of a tool which can help you across those multi-cloud providers. So GCP,
yeah.
AWS, Azure, you're going to get a consistent product. So I think that's important as well. You wouldn't want to use, in my opinion at least, you wouldn't want to have AWS managing your backups in one environment and then Google managing it somewhere else and then Azure managing it somewhere else, because straight away you've got three different tools or sets of tools managing your data. So three sets of skills, three sets of things to monitor and manage and keep up to date with. And in the event of a disaster, you've then got to try and get those things working together. So regardless of how good each of those individual tools are, right, and I'm not commenting on their quality, they're all fine, but having three separate tools does make things very, very complicated. And you might end up in a situation where two of them, you know, you're very skillful on and you've been able to utilize, and the third, you just didn't have the skills. So you've recovered into this compromised environment where you've only got two out of three, you know, 66% of your VMs or workloads working. So I think it's important to choose a standardized tool where possible. And if you have to have two, okay, but try not to have three, four, five, or one per environment. It's just way too complicated.
Agreed. And that's the first thing that we help anyone do is just consolidate tooling either for today or tomorrow. Because even if you say, well, I'm only on premises today, there's no way on this earth that's going to be true in the next couple of years. And most of the companies I speak to already have a mix of all three. So that's just the backup and recovery. But it is a core premise of Rubrik that we've got to take that over just to then get a secure, immutable copy of the data on-prem or cloud or SaaS. But the real secret sauce for me is then what we do with it after. Because we're not just backing it up. We're also then scanning inside it and we're looking at the actual content of the files and we're looking at the threats and whether the data itself is being attacked. So I'm going to start with security and then we'll come to threat. Because security posture is a big one in the sense that in every organization today, you have sensitive data, at least PII, in that you have employees and employees have sensitive information, but you're probably going to have more than that. And so if we then take that top tip of that an attacker is potentially going to steal everything that was on that network in that environment. So the next question is, well, what was in that environment? Well, Rubrik is scanning inside those backups. Every single backup that we do, on-premise, cloud, or SaaS, we scan inside it and we tell you what sensitive data we found. So we'll give you the most at-risk servers, file shares, users, and say, hey, this has a lot of sensitive data files. This is the most recent change because it scans the first backup. First backup, if it has a billion files, might take a week to scan. But it's just using the spare compute of the backup platform. And then the next scan will say, well, only 3% has changed. I only have to scan that 3%. So you can then dive in, give out this UI to a self-service because it's probably not going to be managed by the backup team. And we can say, look, we're finding social security numbers and these are the files that we're finding it in. This is all from the backups. No production impact. And it is giving you the biggest or most breadth of visibility because even if you have data classification tools today, they're probably only scanning where you know to look, the top 20, 40%. Rubrik's scanning 100% of the environment by virtue of scanning the backups. Yes, we have to back it up, but usually that's the best shot that you've got at 100%. And we can tell you on a file or a share or a server basis, but we can also give you a user perspective of that. So based on your user's access to the files, which are the users and groups, and no groups here, probably not the best environment for this one, have the most access to sensitive data. So this isn't just then looking at a ransomware attack perspective, it's looking at day to day, then if somebody was to try and exfiltrate data as an insider threat, then what did they steal? And we have our own pre-built analyzers, so we know what, for example, an Australian bank account number looks like, social security in the US, emails, yada, yada. But you can also add in your own analyzers and say, well, I'm going to look for my own sensitive information by regex or dictionary. And this is all just leveraging your backups for more than just backup. It's telling you what's in it, because that's what you're going to need to know in response to a ransomware attack. And you're going to need to be up on in advance in order to minimize the amount of data that's exfiltrated in the first place.
So there's actually about 10 key points I wanted to dive in on here before we went any further and before I forget them. So, you know, one of them I think is quite important, that once you've taken that copy, where you're doing the scanning is not on your production environment. So about five things come to mind here. If you're scanning, if anyone's done a traditional like in-guest backup, you know how much impact there is on your ESX host when your backup runs. So software used to, you know, delay the time when the backup runs and, you know, stagger them and things like that to mitigate the quite significant impact on production. So that's kind of what legacy platforms are doing. So in this case, one copy is being taken, and then all of that work, the scanning piece, is being done offline. Now, this is a huge benefit. If you've got a 24-hour shop that's running all day, every day, you don't want your backup software or anything scanning it, because it gives you inconsistent performance. So having a solution where you can offload that task is valuable from a performance perspective. It means that your infrastructure running your business critical apps can be sized just for those apps, and it doesn't have to cater for these massive bursts. And backup traditionally has been a massive burst and a high impact. And this kind of a solution really addresses that situation. And, you know, to your point, Josh, you've talked about, you know, it's offloaded. It also means that, you know, when you are doing that live mount, that actual copy, the immutable copy, is being serviced by the backup platform. So you can do a scan or a test against the backup platform while production is still potentially doing something else. So you're actually adding capability as opposed to, you know, leveraging the existing capability of production.
Agreed. And if we link it back to the previous point in terms of your skill sets and capabilities, would you rather be the backup admin that just knows backup, or the backup admin that not only backs up the data but can tell he's in it, and that is going to be of critical importance to the organization in the event of a ransomware attack? Because now you can say, hey, I know what was in that. Absolute game changer. But then the other big problem, actually, and you just touched on was,
you know, the fact that you're analyzing where the sensitive data is. So you put in Rubrik, then you've actually now discovered where your sensitive information is. You haven't just got a backup. You just haven't got a recovery platform or DR or ransomware. You actually have now got a discovery tool, which is enabling you to solve some of those tabletop exercises you talked about in the first five tips, which is, where is my data? You know, who's got access to it? And this tool, I can already see, you know, you can tell who's got access to where and how often they access files. So you could then potentially have your compliance and legal team help that person understand these risks, so that they don't go clicking on emails and they don't get those really 101 level security attacks that will be focused on everyone in the org, that they're less susceptible and less likely to actually be vulnerable to those. So I think that's a good tool as well, that it's teaching the organization, hey, you have access to sensitive data. Let's put you through a higher level of enablement to understand what you potentially might be attacked with.
Yeah. And I think I could probably justify Rubrik on that one tool alone: backup, modernization, automation, and then just telling you what's in it. But then the last piece of the puzzle I want to leave you with just for the demo, and this is my baby and what I manage at Rubrik in terms of the roadmap, is just the data threat analytics. That we're not just backing it up. We're not just scanning to tell you what's in it. We're also looking at what is happening with the data itself. And so if we go to anomalies here, what we're doing is we're looking inside each backup. And if there's any anomalous amount of change, then the Rubrik cluster itself does a diff against the previous backup, and it works out what actually changed here. And is this a known malware family or gang? And if so, who is it? So here's an example from our labs, where we're just simulating Lockbit. And we're telling you, hey, on every single one of these servers, this is the number of suspicious files that we've just seen as now encrypted. This is what they deleted, addified, modified. And then we're also linking it to the sensitive data. So we can tell you, hey, there is, you know, 69 sensitive files on this VM that was encrypted. That is now probably your minimum baseline of exfiltration, but we can also drive the recovery of those files or the whole virtual machine. But that's still a file level encryption attack. it's only 40% of attacks. For the most common, the 60%, it's going to be a hypervisor-based attack. We can tell you these are the VMs that have been encrypted. Point, click, go. And whether it's one VM or 100 VMs, then we can say, okay, let's recover that whole VM. And then all we got to do is run through the snapshot recovery workflow for all those virtual machines, put them back to production, put them to dev test, put them to an isolated environment, whatever you want to do. But that's just an encryption attack. The problem with that is that's the end of the kill chain. And so at Rubrik, your next benefit is, well, I can't just recover that to yesterday because, okay, we're telling you it was encrypted. We're telling you the last clean recovery point that's free from encryption, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't contain the attacker and the tooling. So this is where our threat hunting capability comes in. We're built into this platform. You can now say to your intelligence team, so anyone you have on IR or security, say, you don't have to recover a single server to find a clean recovery point. We can threat hunt inside our backups without even spinning it up. So think about the time saving in that alone. I don't have to recover it to scan it. Scan it in its offline state. And a great example I give everybody is that if you can't even just search for notepad.exe, then you definitely can't threat hunt. So we'll just say, hey, we're going to search for notepad, and we're going to search. We can select everything on this server, or we can say, hey, we're just going to do a handful of servers here. And then what do I want to do? The most recent backup, or do I want to do the time range? Oh, God, hang on. Windows is asking, reschedule. Get rid of that. There we go. Windows updates. And this is the really cool superpower for me, because if you think about doing a recovery, one, that's time consuming, but two, you're only scanning that point. So you go through that whole rigmarole to then just say, hey, that point in time doesn't work. Whereas a Rubrik, we can scan the time range. So we can say, hey, we scanned the last 30 days of backups, and we can then tell you exactly where the attacker is, when they entered, and a clean recovery point per server. And here's an example that I ran earlier yesterday. This is scanning a Windows VM, and we scanned a Windows VM in 21 seconds. So think about that. You couldn't even stand that up via a live mount in 21 seconds, never mind scan it to find where a file was or wasn't and the matches, and it was then give you a list of every single file that matched that pattern, and then give you the ability to then drive a cyber recovery, or better yet, quarantine that server. Because you might find in your environment that there's only, and this is actually what we see, is there's only a handful of servers that actually contain the attacker's tooling. So quarantine those backups so you can't recover those servers. Everything else, we give you that clarity that it doesn't contain the attacker, so you can just recover it to yesterday and minimize the data loss. So threat hunting is an absolute game changer.
Yeah, threat hunting is absolutely important. It makes you, that dwell time, actually, that you mentioned at the start of the episode, you don't know how long someone's in, but this is a tool that's enabling you to, you know, very, with a high probability of success, find out where that point is and then restore from the most recent prior to that. So I think your point about immutable backups is very well aligned with Cesare Reddy from VMware. He had just did an episode and he talked about immutable backups are very important, but they're only part of the solution. And what you've covered off is exactly that. The immutable backup is just part. It's not a solution in itself. You need all those other aspects.
Yeah, and it's actually something we've seen in the industry is that everyone's now come to the same realization you need immutable backups, but they haven't got to the maturity level yet of realizing, well, what happens if you already had immutable backups? And the secret of Rubrik is that we've been immutable since day one. We have an immutable file system. It's innate to every backup ingested by Rubrik. It's always immutable. So what we've seen is, well, what happens if you have 8 years of everything already being immutable? And what we've seen is that now your recovery time is actually how fast can you scan to find a clean recovery point? Here's one VM, 21 seconds. And then how fast can you mount it, either a live mount or recover? That's your true recovery time. And anyone that's saying I can recover in minutes from ransomware but can't find a clean recovery point is just talking BS and it's just marketing.
Yeah, the recovery point finding it is incredibly complex. and also leads to an extended RTO. So trying to find that can lead to days or weeks of time. And the restoration also increases your RTO, and anything that increases your RTO is not good. You want to avoid that at all costs. So I think your exercise and your five key points, going through that, understanding that the tooling may be compromised that you're using, and what if you don't have that tool, what's your next way to resolve the situation is so critical. So, you know, threat hunting, minimizing the impact, being able to live mount, to be able to look at things, but more importantly, that this tool with Rubrik can actually do this while your infrastructure is offline, right? Your SAN might be compromised, your HCI.
Very good point, mate. Very good point.
Your VMware stack, your AHV stack, whatever, it could all be compromised, and that's something you should assume. And this can all be done on the Rubrik platform, which is separate to that infrastructure. So I think that's key, that we always talk about 3-2-1 backups, and everyone's talked about that for years, but it's not just okay to have a copy. You've got to know what's in there. You've got to be able to look at it, analyze it, use it, the live mount capability, obviously, and threat hunting, and being able to look through that data, check for sensitive information. All these things just make compliance so much easier for customers. And none of these things are easy to do, you know, which obviously why is Rubrik's in this business, because not easy, and it's a huge market and a huge problem, which is, unfortunately, I think we're at the bottom of the hockey stick with ransomware. I think it's really just, it's becoming so attractive for these attackers, and they're getting paid off so much money that it's just going to keep getting worse. So we need to get in front of them, that's for sure. So I think...
And actually, I'm gonna steal one thing you said there, because I don't think I emphasize it enough when I speak about this. This is all while your infrastructure is offline. Mm. Very good point. I should do a better job. But last thing I just want to show you, because I appreciate we're running short on time, and this is our most recent addition in our platform. Actually, only in the last couple of weeks, and this is my baby. Now, forgive the UI. UI needs some work. We've mostly been focusing on the engine behind it, which is the most important thing. Is what we're actually now doing is we're not just waiting to be told what to look for, is that every single Rubrik cluster is connected to our intelligence feed, and we're now looking for the top 50 malware families and associate their tooling automatically on behalf of every single customer proactively. And if we find a match, we're then going to alert them via this interface, which then also pushes it out to their SIM and their intelligence tooling. So like, let's say, for example, an attacker puts a remote access tool on a server, Rubrik backs it up. They haven't encrypted anything yet, but this threat monitoring is going to tell you, hey, we found NJRAT on this server. We found Mimikatz on this server. We found something that you need to be aware of, because it is likely a precursor to an attack. And this is us moving from being reactive to proactive. And probably one of the most things I'm excited about, because in an ideal world, we would help a customer not even have to use Rubrik in the first place.
Absolutely. I think prevention is better than cure in most cases. And, you know, I really like getting all that data together, the fact that you're processing it and trying to give that value back to all your customers. So I think that's a perfect place to end. So I really appreciate your time again. The demo was fantastic. I think everyone listening's probably learned a lot on the cybersecurity piece and some of these capabilities Rubrik have. You know, if you're not using them, if you don't have them, you should really consider, you know, a product like Rubrik that does them, because when you get hit, you definitely want a tool that's going to do some or all of these, ideally all of them, of course.
Yeah, and be very careful. There's a lot of Rubrik wannabes out there in the world today, and they'll say, hey, we can do everything Rubrik can do, and here's a quote, and we're 50%. And all I would advocate is there's nothing new under the sun. It's test it, test it, test it. So if someone says they can threat hunt, call it silence.
Sorry about that. It's the first time I've been interrupted by a phone call, but...
We're only human. But all I'd say is, don't trust marketing. Don't trust salespeople, because, oh my God, we all know they'll say anything to try and get a deal. Say, hey, let's test it. Now, it doesn't have to be a test in your own environment. I'll happily accept a hosted environment. but test it and say, okay, let's now do a threat hunt and let's see how long it takes. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to see the difference between somebody saying they can do it and somebody being actually able to deliver it. And it will then, it will blow your mind, because then you can say, well, hang on, where are you running this threat hunt from? Where are you running the scan? And absolutely, it's either going to be really slow or it's going to be in a VM, and it's, and then go back to the, you know, top five tips. It's not available. So don't just take anyone's word for it. Test it, prove it, and then you'll get the real answer of what your ability to actually use this is going to be in response to an attack.
Mm, absolutely. And also go to a partner of that vendor or the vendors you're considering, and get their opinion as well. Because vendors, I've worked at vendors, we always talk things up a little bit too much sometimes, but it's great to get a partner to go through independently and review your business requirements against products and solutions and go from there. But again, Josh.
Hang on, I've got one thing to add. A good partner. Like, good I want somebody who knows what they're talking about and isn't just like, I despise the box pushers, like the 50,000. Hope they're not listening to this, but it's just like, come on. I don't need somebody who will just give me 10 quotes and say, well, you tell me what you want. Like, no, I need an opinion. I need your expertise and your advice, not somebody who's just going to say, hey, what do you want me to quote you on?
Absolutely. So an architect has to come in with a conceptual overview, a logical overview, and a physical recommendation on products and solutions and how they integrate with your environment. So yeah, get yourself a VCDX or an NPX architect or someone who's done TOGAF or someone who's got some really good experience in that enterprise space as well, and go from there. But yeah, this has been really fun. So I love your passion. It's very clear you love the product and solutions, and yeah, I look forward to doing some work with you in the future.
Thanks, Josh.
Awesome. Thank you.